Alrighty, welcome back to another episode of Flip the Record here today, Audio Slave.
Yes.
Before we get into Audio Slave, Joey, any news this week? I don't know. It's been, well, actually, okay. I got to tell you about a bit I was thinking of. So, I had this thought as this rap beat's been going on that it would be funny to do a player hater of the year at the end of the year review. And, you know, it had crept into mind that maybe Rick Ross falls into this category.
Yeah, that's fair.
You know, a couple other people. Future, definitely. I think that's over. I don't think there's any point of doing the bit anymore. Kendrick has won. Kendrick, 4 diss tracks to 1 in the last 5 days?
Yeah. Well,
Wednesday was Euphoria.
Yeah.
Thursday night was
6:16 in the morning, and then
the Grams. You're right. Friday was, yep. And then last night we got Not Like That.
Yeah.
And Drake dropped Family Matters, and within essentially moments, Kendrick had Not Like That ready to roll. Or sorry, not
Meet the Grams.
Meet the Grams ready to roll.
Within a half hour.
Within a half hour. Referencing things from Family Matters.
Yeah.
On real levels of hate.
Yeah, that was crazy that he had someone like leak that to him beforehand so that he could already have the diss ready to go. You definitely, it's something that could only happen, or maybe not, but like you'd think more so in like the digital era, where like someone's like, all right, here's the track, like I'll send it to you like before it's released. Like I've never heard of someone drop a diss and someone already had a diss in response to that diss.
Ready to go? That's fucking wild, dude. I think maybe we should talk through it a little bit slower because a lot happened here, and it's going to give context to where I think this is going. Euphoria on Wednesday. I think we both thought the lyrics were pretty hard. The beat was kind of whatever, but the lyrics were like, damn, he really like stepped it up and took it to another level. There was a line towards the end where he's like, you know, what are you teaching your kids?
Yeah.
And I think that set Drake off. 6:16 comes out Friday morning, right after that. And there was also a line in Euphoria where he said, I like back-to-back, I'm going to come back to that.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's when he dropped the back-to-back with 6:16 in L.A. 6:16 in L.A. is probably not either of our favorite tracks in this whole, probably maybe my least favorite track in this whole debacle.
There's still some good stuff in there.
There's some good stuff in there. Yeah. I said to you, it's a bit more Kendrick almost like telling him, like, bro, go get help. Like, yeah. You can't keep doing this shit.
Well, it's also just flexing, like dropping another diss before he can get back to the first one.
100%. Plus, it's in the same style as Drake's, you know, famous, what is it, 2 in Toronto, yeah. You know, stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, and the other, there's like 5 or 6 things that could also be linked.
Yeah,
in,
yeah. A bunch of, you know, double, triple, quadruple entendres on top of that. Not our favorite track, but still made a message. Friday afternoon, or I guess Friday night.
No, it was like 10 o'clock at night or something.
10 o'clock at night.
It was late at night.
Drake drops 7.5 minute long Family Matters.
And it kind of hits.
That's a banger, man. He said, fuck it. Gloves are off. I'm throwing everything. Maybe not everything, but I'm throwing a good chunk of what I got now.
That was a good track.
Fucked up shit, some of it. And it also, like, he switches the beat 2 or 3 times. And I thought all the beats were fire in this track. Flow is great. You got, like, back-to-back Drake on the track again.
Yeah, it was a good diss.
Great
sure.
diss.
For sure.
And then 30 minutes later, Kendrick ended his life with Meet the Grams.
Yeah.
I mean, just unreal levels of hate. Calling him a pedophile, calling him a deadbeat, this, that, the other.
Singing to his son and his mom and his dad, calling him out by name.
By name. And pretty much saying, like, hey, your dad's a deadbeat, I'll raise you, little Adonis. I got you. I mean, whoa.
And the track itself is, like, eerie. It's just like this, like piano you can hear over and over, and it's like it's not even fun to listen to.
No, it's not a fun listen, except for the fact that I find myself laughing every time because I just cannot believe some of the things he says on that track.
Yeah, it's real, real hatred.
True hatred. And he didn't let it stop there. He killed him. He didn't let. And I should back up on Family Matters. Drake at the end was like, "Stop, you're dead," something like that. Kendrick, 30 minutes later, was like, nah, fuck you, you're dead.
Yeah.
Then last night, Saturday morning, he drops Not Like That, and he opens the track with, I see dead people. And this is maybe going to be the hit of the summer. This song rocks. The beat's awesome. Kendrick's having fun with it. He's not even really, like, he's got some, like, banger lines in there. But it's more just like a fuck you, haha, fuck you, haha.
Yeah, I was going to say, lyrically, it might be one of the weakest or second weakest, but the beat hits.
It's just a boom roasted track, but it's also fire, and it's going to get played in clubs, bars. Yeah. It's going to be a hit.
Well, it doesn't matter, too, because he had already killed Drake at that point, so it's like him just putting anything else is just, it's extra
carnage.
It's
just gravy.
Yeah.
And he said in there, too, he's like, I got more where that came from, too. Keep it going. Keep it. I got more.
Also, the album cover or the artwork on that one too.
Wild.
Drake's embassy in Toronto with the sex offender marks on it. That was crazy.
I think it was. I counted them. I think it was 13 sex offender marks on that picture of the compound. Just and call him out by name on the track too. Not 40. He called out Baca. He called out a couple other people. I'm forgetting right now. I mean, just again, unreal levels of hate. It's awesome, dude.
You know what's funny now that we've come full circle is everyone online is like, man, J. Cole really saw the future and knew to back away.
And so that's where I was going with this. Today was an all-time Twitter day, dude. The memes I saw or like the sketches I saw of people doing like Drake in the studio hearing Meet the Grams, all-time shit. And in a lot of them, you would have a flash over to Cole. And he's just like drinking coffee, listening to like – you know, lo-fi pop or something, like just chilling. Oh man, Cole knew. There was another one where Drake's on the phone. Cole's like, I can't help you. And Kendrick calls, and as soon as Cole picks up the phone, Kendrick goes, I was conflicted. You misusing my influence. Cole's like, well, stop. Oh, dude.
That's funny.
All time hate, all time rap beef.
Yeah. I mean, after seeing this, I do actually, it does take some of the sting away from Cole.
I don't know what to make of it, man. Yeah, on one hand, like, what a shit thing to do to just, like, back out and apologize. But on the other hand.
But also, like, if you're not really that into it, and, like,
You don't want this smoke.
And if Kendrick and Drake are that into it, it's not worth it.
Yeah, you gotta step aside. Ah. Yeah, and so, what happens now? Because at the end of Family Ties or Family Matters too, like, I think Drake said something along the lines of, like, I'm going on vacation now.
Well, we all also left out the part where Drake accused Kendrick of beating on his wife.
Oh, yeah. That was one of the big disses off Family Matters.
Which is crazy.
Kendrick didn't really address that.
No. And then we also missed too, like, Kendrick accused Drake of having a 11-year-old daughter, but that might have been a plant. Which is crazy too.
That's a weird story that I've heard a lot of. Like, I can't get anything confirmed either way. So, you know, there's people saying that like Drake set it up with whoever the mole is, that the mole would tell Kendrick, and then Kendrick would go for it. And
even if that's true, and Drake set him up, like, it doesn't matter. He still got. Even if you take that part out of the song, he still destroyed the rest of his family on that song.
Well, and that's kind of how I feel about this newest track. Not like that. It's like, it really doesn't matter what the lyrical contents are so much as it does just like now, not only has Kendrick verbally assaulted you on Meet the Grams, he's got a banger that people are going to be listening to all summer long and reminding you of every day.
Yeah, true.
And I mean, unless Drake's working on something, which I would imagine this is not over. I can't imagine this is over.
I don't know, dude. I feel like if you're Drake's camp, like,
how many bullets can you take?
It's got to be like, hey, like, I mean, maybe they put out one more, and then regardless of what Kendrick does, they just stop. But they can't. There's no. I would put the over under of
remaining tracks,
remaining Drake disses at one and a half.
Yeah,
I think he puts out one more, but no more after.
Well, the thing is, too, is like if Drake comes back, how many does Kendrick drop after that?
I don't know,
dude. He's coming up on a full album length of hate. Yeah, he's getting close. He's
got an EP of hate.
Oh, man. Plus, the other thing that Kendrick did that was pretty clever was he basically pitted all the people that Drake has worked with against him, especially in the newest track between Lil Yachty, YG, a bunch of the other guys in Atlanta, pitted a bunch of them against Drake and put him in a spot where if he's right, then Drake doesn't hang out with those people. And if Drake calls for them to help him, then he was also right because he says Drake just uses them.
Yeah,
it's crazy, dude. So I don't know. I don't know how Drake comes back from it. I think he will. Yeah, one song sounds about right, but man, I was pumped up that. Oh, dude, the other thing, right? So, did you hear Metro Boomin? I sent you it. You listen to Metro Boomin's diss track or diss beat?
Yeah, yeah.
Unbelievable. Talk another play a hate shit of all time. Metro Boomin drops a free, like, and encourages people to use this beat that he drops titled BBL Drizzy, which we had talked about in the Rick Ross thing. It's a fire beat, dude.
I listened to the beat where somebody rapped over it too.
Yeah. People have been doing that now. Yeah. So who would be the funniest of like mainstream rappers to drop a single over that?
I mean, J. Cole.
J. Cole would be funny. I personally want to see Pusha T do it.
Oh, yeah, that'd be funny.
Yeah, just out from the clouds, man. RKO out of nowhere.
Yeah, that'd be a good one.
I think Rick Ross would also be funny. It might not be the best one, but it would be hilarious.
I was going to say, I don't think Rick Ross has the lyrical ability to.
It don't matter, dude. It would just be funny to see Rick Ross be like, you know what, fuck this guy. And Rick Ross, he's been doing the same thing Drake's been doing. He's just been going on IG stories being like, hey, look at this bitch, BBL Drizzy. Hey, dude, he had like a fucking like an hour long Instagram reel the other day and a few after the Not Like That came out. Dude, another one. Just unreal levels of hate.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Twitter, man, has been great the last few days.
It's been a good weekend for for us, man. Had a lot of fun with it. Other than that, 2 weeks until new 21 Pilots.
Yeah.
I think that's all I got.
Yeah, I don't really have anything.
Okay. cool. Then let's talk Audioslave. Interesting band. So this is really the first like super group we've done, I think. you kind of smirk at that, but I truly think that combining Chris Cornell with Tom Morello and the boys from Rage is not to the same level, but akin to what Led Zeppelin did with Jimmy Page and Robert Plant. It's that level of, like, innovative, exciting, fresh shit with just masters of their craft. I mean,
yeah, I would say more so Cornell and Morello, less the other guys from Rage, but I also don't know what they individually contributed to the band.
How do you mean?
Oh, like Tom's guitar and Chris's songwriting and vocals are very distinct, and you can hear them in each track. Like, I don't know what the other guys.
So, okay, I got the list of guys here. Let me grab this for a sec. So we got Tim Comerford on bass. Stop there. There's plenty of tracks where you hear this low thumping, like really funky, fun bass.
Mm-hmm.
Am I saying he's John Bonham? No, or not Bonham. John Paul Jones.
Yeah, right.
No, but still really good. Brad Wilk on drums, moments of greatness, other moments where I'm not as impressed, but is what it is. Like, I'm not dissuaded by it. So, yeah, like I said, it's not to the level of you know, four all-timers. But I think just, yeah, it's kind of a mix between what I'm saying and what you're saying. Just having Chris and Tom together in the band, it's fucking unbelievable, dude. I really, truly believe that Tom Morello was as influential to 2000s rock as Jimmy Page was to 70s rock, 80s rock. Like, you hear Tom Morello on Linkin Park. You hear it in Foo Fighters to an extent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these big, heavy bands from the 2000s, even like a 3 Days Grace, you hear Tom Morello. But even their bits that they pick up from that, pale in comparison to the things he can do on a guitar, man. We've talked about him to a good extent because he's been a kind of a mercenary on so many tracks that we've already covered, man. But holy shit, is he a legend. I mean, like Mount Rushmore of guitarists, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't argue against that.
Yeah, and then Chris Cornell, I mean, it's a very different thing from Rage. I've mentioned before Rage was maybe an early predecessor to something like Linkin Park because you had that kind of hip-hoppy rock blend. That I think Zach De La Rocha, the previous lead singer for Rage, gave them. Chris Cornell is not that at all. Mm-mm. Chris Cornell is very blues-rooted, but also just kind of brings this unique thing. Like, you don't – a lot of times in rock band, like hard rock bands, you'll either have a guy that's a little bit like softer and tries to raise himself up to the level of the music, or somebody kind of like Zach De La Rocha, who's only really good when he's like yelling. Whereas Chris Cornell, I think, mixes and kind of goes back and forth between the high level and the mid level fantastically. Just like such powerful, like interesting, like a really interesting vocal tone. And also just like, I don't know, there's this intangible quality about his sound, man, that just rips.
Yeah, it's got the it factor.
It's got the it factor. That's it. And for that reason alone, I don't know how this band didn't have more than three songs. I'll talk about why I think it didn't, or more than three albums.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll talk about it why a little bit as we get towards the end, but God, I would have loved to hear like 8-9 albums from these guys, man. Fuck, this is an awesome band.
Yeah, really good. And you know what's funny about this is Rick Rubin produced the first two albums.
I know. Yeah. So
the first album is really, really good.
Yeah, and I hate you too, Rick Rubin, since we're being haters today. But got to give props where props are due, because he did a great job with the first two albums.
Yeah, 100%.
And even, like, really getting the band together, you know. So the story here is kind of Rage breaks up in 97, I think. And Zach De La Rocha had cited, like, kind of a breakdown in the creative process. Said something to the effect of, it was hard to make decisions. It was hard to get anything done because there was just so much back and forth with the guys to the point where we were fist fighting. It just became too much to get shit done, and I had to go a different direction. So for a while, Rage is looking for a new singer. They go through a kind of a wild variety of different people, from like hip-hop artists to, you know, somebody who had been working with Ozzy Osbourne. And Rick Rubin sets it up with it. He's like, no, guys, Chris Cornell is available. Soundgarden broke up for a little while in 2000. So Chris Cornell becomes available, and basically Rick Rubin makes it happen. Mm. They get together, and after kind of an early stint of, let's say, strife, you know, once Chris comes on, it sounded like, from what I read, there was a problem where there was two managing groups, because you had Chris with his managers, Rage with their managers. And now we're trying to put it together, and the managers were just a little bit too involved. And Chris was basically like, you know what, fuck this. Early on, before the first album even comes out. After about a week or so, the boys talk kind of separately. They get it figured out, and they fire all the managers. And then they get one managing group to just take care of the band. A new one entirely.
Smart, I guess.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't know how much Rick Rubin was involved in mending those fences, but whatever he did, it was... God, I hate giving him props, man, but masterstroke making this happen.
Mm-hmm.
So for that, thank you, but let's not forget all the shit. Regardless of that, man, it's, I guess, looking at this first album, and we'll just get into it, kind of. You could say this is a bit Rage Against the Machine, just with a different singer.
Yeah, you can hear parts of it, for sure.
I don't think so much that the next two albums are that. This is very much like just, you know, picking up Zach, dropping in Chris a little bit, which is not a problem necessarily. I very much like Rage Against the Machine. What you get here is just you get that different sound on the mic, and you get a very much less politically charged musical concept.
Yeah, definitely.
And that was somewhat intentional, it sounds like to me. Tom Morello broke off, or not broke off, but while he was doing this, he did another thing with a band that I believe is called the Nightcrawlers. And that was kind of the Night Watchman. That was kind of his outlet to do the political messaging, stuff like that. And they make it pretty apparent that they're not going to talk politics on most of these three albums, which is kind of a nice break. Especially, like I said, with Chris being an upgrade on the mic, frankly.
Yeah.
This album is really, really cool. Like, as I was listening, I don't think there's one song I dislike on this first album.
No, I don't. I'm in agreement with you there.
It's,
yeah,
14 tracks and not one's bad.
I don't think I saved one or two of them, but I like a vast majority of this album.
Yeah, and so that's like, that's kind of the discussion we had last week with Jet, where I wanted to give that first album like a 10 out of 10, and I just couldn't quite get there. I feel kind of the same way about this album. There's some really, really high highs. Great, great songs on this album. And then a lot of just, like, really good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not a huge fan of the last track. We'll get to it. But, like, overall, man, just a fucking fantastic album start to finish. This album was nominated for the 2004. Am I right here?
Well, this album came out in 2002. Yeah.
This album was nominated for the 2004 Grammy Rock Album of the Year. Which, yeah, strange. This came out in 02 and it was nominated in 04. Regardless.
Yeah.
So the winner of the 2004 Rock Grammy of the Year was Foo Fighters One by One. I think we would both agree that's probably an oversight.
Yeah, I have to pull up.
I'll pull it up right now. But when I was looking at it earlier, by no means was I like, oh, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. You know, this is Echo, Silence, Patience, and Grace. No. The other artists considered in this category were Evanescence for Fallen, Matchbox 20, More Than You Think You Are, and Nickelback, The Long Road. Whatever. Foo Fighters One by One features tracks like All My Life, Times Like These, Disenchanted Lullaby. I very much remember us kind of being wishy-washy on this one.
Yeah.
Like, some good tracks, some bad tracks, some in the middle. And I feel like it's just a lazy take by the Academy. Not that I put a whole lot of stakes in what the Grammys thinks about rock music. They, you know, as I go along here, like, Coldplay has won a rock Grammy. The War on Drugs won a rock Grammy. Ozzy Osbourne won it in 2023. So what are we talking about, dude?
That's wild.
Sheryl Crow has two rock Grammys. Anyways, you get my point.
Yeah.
They don't, in my opinion, they don't have a great grasp on the genre. But regardless, Foo Fighters has won 5 Grammys for a rock album of the year.
Yeah.
So it feels like a bit of a lazy, like, oh, Foo Fighters made a new album? Bang.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'd have to go listen track by track for the Foo Fighters one, but just off you reading those tracks, I think I'd probably prefer this album.
Yeah, it's crazy. By the way, the next year was American Idiot. Just a thought. But anyways.
Great album.
Great album. There's some funny ones in here. Foo Fighters, their most recent Grammy win, 2022, Medicine at Midnight. Crazy.
That's wild.
That's not to say there was great competition. AC/DC Power Up, Chris Cornell, like, anthology. Yeah, not great competition, but... Oh, and Paul McCartney in 2022. So, you know, that is what it is, but... I could sit here and kind of bitch about this page I'm looking at for a while, but let's get back to the Audioslave album.
Yeah.
Unless you got anything else in preamble, the first track here is a fucking awesome album opener. Cochise. It's got this, like, funny, tense, like, scratchy buildup. It sounds like Tom's just, like, taking the edge of the pick and just, like, scratching it along the strings a little bit. And then it breaks into this very, like, classic Rage Against the Machine-sounding beat. Funky, heavy guitar, banging rock drums. And I'm going to say that a lot on this album, so bear with me. Cornell lets it rip on the mic. Right off the bat, you hear him yelling it. And he does not stop yelling from moment one to the finish of this track. You hear bits of Morello, like, licking and, like, giving you a little taste of what's coming. Doing weird shit with the guitar. You hear that, like... I don't even know how to describe some of the effects he makes, dude. Sometimes it sounds a bit like a laser gun you might hear in Star Wars or something. it's just so fucking cool. I'm so appreciative of the things he's able to do. And this track fucking rocks. It's a great opener.
Yeah, absolutely. And, yeah, Cornell singing Go On and Save Yourself and Take It On Me. And when asked about the lyrics, if he had someone in mind when he wrote it, he said, yeah, me yelling at myself looking in the mirror.
That's an interesting thing there, because... Cornell is not exactly a model citizen, let's say. Very much struggles with addictions, drugs, alcohol, whatnot. And he had mentioned kind of after the album came out, but as in reference to the time before the album came out, that getting this album out kind of saved his life, which is an interesting point given the fact that he kills himself later on. But he said, like, yeah, I was in a weird place, going through addictions, going through rehab, and getting in the studio with these guys literally saved my life, which is cool. But just to add some context to what he's saying there about, you know, this him looking into the mirror and being like, all right, get your shit together. Really cool opener. Even cooler next track, Show Me How to Live. I mean, this is one of the classic tracks of the 2000s, like top 10 rock songs of the 2000s for me. Starts off kind of low and plodding with another funky heavy riff from Rello. Pounding drums start to come on. And then Cornell is working in this very low, almost conversational range in the beginning and absolutely tears the cover off the mic going into the chorus. I mean, the guitars buzz up to 11. Drums are firing. It's the model for like a stadium anthem, dude. It's a fantastic like alt hard rock track.
Yeah, I like this song a lot. Funny enough, the lyrics are about like a classic Frankenstein.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, people have said it could be about elements of religion, but no, he references like, there's a couple references that seem like it's pretty clear that it's like a Frankenstein reference.
Yeah, I guess I never really like read the lyrics start to finish, but I guess I could see that. I always just kind of took this as a very generic kind of rock trope, but
yeah, yeah, it's nothing too crazy. And then at the end of the song, Cornell did that weird vocal effect at the end. He took his throat and just kept going like this, where he's like pulling it out and that.
It sounds like you hear like a sitar playing on the end too. It's that Indian instrument or the round neck.
Okay, okay.
Down, down, down.
Yeah,
down,
it does sound like that.
Bow. Yeah, and then and he's also doing that thing with his voice that's so fucking weird. It sounds like it's like digitally altered.
Yeah, he's trying. I mean, he's changing the pitch by just messing with his throat. It's kind of weird, but it's cool, I guess.
It's really, really cool. Another thing that, like, who the fuck does that? I love it, dude.
Yeah. After that is Gasoline. Which anytime you have a rock song called Gasoline, it's got to deliver.
It's got to be a banger, and it hits. It's a little bit more mid-tempo, a little bit experimental with the guitar, where in the beginning you kind of get this more, like, wacky Morello lick kind of thing. But as it goes, it more breaks into the same kind of thing, where you get that rage sound and Cornell on the mic. Again, like, their classic structure for this album, too, is going to be Cornell slowly and lowly singing through the verses and then breaking off a fucking bomb in the chorus. And that's exactly what he does here, too. Energy at an all-time high, stuttery, echoey kind of riff, quick drums, just like shuffling, pounding away. And then you get an awesome, awesome solo from Morello on this one, where it feels like he's like really taking out some of the tricks in the bag and just playing around, having some fun with it, seeing what he can do. There's a song on Rage Against the Machine's first album called Bomb Track.
Yeah.
That sounds very much like songs like this. And I will probably use to describe a number of other songs on this album that I just wanted to bring up now because I will say it again and again.
Yeah, Bomb Track's a really cool song.
Yeah.
But yeah, this one lyrically about just escaping from reality, you know, burning the gasoline to get as far away as you can. But yeah, just a good, solid rock song.
Yeah, really good stuff here. Next song, What You Are. Slower, kind of drum-driven track. But it's the same thing. It's the same structure. Sweetly, dangerously kind of singing the verse, breaking off the chorus. Morello doesn't really, like, do the craziest shit here, but it still sounds really good. It's tuned down. It's churny, heavy. But it's pretty simple overall. The vocal work, though, it's just so angry, so powerful, so belting, man. It's a great deep cut off this album.
Yeah, about a toxic relationship. And yeah, the vocal work is just, it's really amazing. I mean, throughout the album, but on this track in particular.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, and even the songwriting, too. Like, Chris Cornell's very, very good songwriter.
And that's an interesting thing, too, because, like, some of the critical reception I read of these three albums is that, like, some of the writing wasn't, at least critically, received as super deep or meaningful.
I thought it was really good.
I think he's a good writer, too, but yeah. I'm just, some of the more critical reviews of these albums is that it's a bit word salad-y. You get some of that.
I don't know. Maybe a little bit, but like,
I think that's a harsh, it's a harsh criticism.
Yeah, I think a lot of it's just introspective.
Yeah, I think so too. And there's a track on the next album that I'll talk about that I think is very word salad-y. I don't think there's that on this album, though. I think he's as clear-headed as he's ever been on this album.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't get, like, last week we talked about Jet, and I definitely got the vibe, like, in the back half of their discography. I was like, oh, yeah, like, they're just throwing stuff at the wall.
Same thing.
I never really felt that with Chris Cornell.
No, neither did I. Which, the next track is a great example of great writing, Like a Stone. This is one of the all-time ballads from Cornell's catalog, and he's got a few, but yeah. This is a fantastic ballad. And, you know, musically, it's nothing, like, there's nothing too wild on this song. Obviously, it's a ballad. You're slowing it down. You're not doing crazy. But even the little things here, like, you get this fairly simple, plucky riff from Tom on the verses. And even with that, he's bending strings as he goes, hitting the whammy bar, and just adding little bits to add a little flair. Like, it's that attention to detail that I fucking love about him. You still get like up-tempo rocky drums here, not like super loud, but you can hear them going along here, and that's some of Brad's better work. But it's really about Chris here, like the cleaned up, not so gritty vocal on the verses and most of the chorus, really traveling through the lows and the highs, like getting different tones and so much emotion. And then you get that little bit of grit at the very end of the chorus. You hear him kind of rattling in the mic a little bit. Oh, it's so fucking good, dude. This is another one of my favorite tracks from this album.
Every time this song comes on shuffle, I have to listen to it. It's one of my favorite. It's probably my favorite Tom Morello solo, or at least one of them.
That's a pretty good one. Yeah. I mean, it's not one of my favorites, but it's pretty good, man.
Every time it hits, like, I always find myself turning it up even louder.
Oh, 100%.
When that part's coming on. But, yeah, Chris Cornell on the mic is
he's fantastic. It's those drawn-out lines in the chorus, man. In your hand. Oh, my God. Fucking bangs.
Yeah, and lyrically, it's funny. Bassist Tim said that the song's about an old man waiting for his death who's sitting in his house alone after all his friends and family have passed on. And then Chris Cornell actually said, he's like, no, that's not what it's about. It's a song about concentrating on the afterlife you would hope for rather than the normal approach. You work really hard all your life to be a good person, a moral person, and fair and generous, and then you go to hell anyway. It's kind of like a darker take than what everyone else thought.
Yeah. Huh.
And then other people online were saying that they thought it was about, you know, just because he struggled with drugs, that it could be about heroin too, but I don't think that's the case.
No, I didn't get that really either. I thought it was more, truly, I thought it was more of a relationship song than anything, but I could see that other take on it too. Not so much the drug one, but.
But even just, I'll wait for you there like a stone. Such a great line.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. Like, just, it's fantastic writing, dude. Like,
yeah.
Not tropey at all. Very unique, very original. Love it.
Yeah, after that is Set It Off. It's another good song. People were again saying online this could be about Christ or Martin Luther King. Lots of different interpretations, but there are elements of religion in the lyrics on this one.
Yeah, and that's an issue that Rage has tackled previously and not been so nice about. I would venture to say that Tom gets a say in what gets written, but doesn't necessarily write. And this might be something where he was like, well, you know, a little bit here, a little bit there. Yeah, other than that, like, this is one of the cooler songs that Tom does on guitar on this album. Like, he's got all the toys out, all the pedals, all the loops. He's got all sorts of shit going here. Wild fucking noises from his guitar, just licking all up and down. This is another bomb track here. Bluesy, kind of old school classic riff as we get past the opener. Little bit grittier than like a classic rock sound, but not quite like a new metal thing. It's just really cool sound, really original from these guys. Drums are great here too. It just, you're getting great like pace setting, great tone setting from the drums with the volume level from the drums, the speed. A lot of good work here.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And then on the Like a Stone too, I forgot to say, they ended up shooting the music video at Jimi Hendrix's old house where he wrote Purple Haze, which is pretty cool.
Oh, yeah, that was cool. And actually, now that we're bringing up music videos, another cool music video, Show Me How to Live, was banned off MTV.
Really?
banned off MTV for depicting, basically the video is the band, they're all in a car, like on the run from the cops. And at one point in the video, they kind of run one of the cops off the road into a ditch and he like falls off a cliff. And they got banned from MTV for this track for showing them like violence against police.
That's funny because nobody would bat an eye on that.
Nobody
today.
Would have fucking batted an eye then.
Yeah.
Like anybody who's listening to Audioslave knows what Rage did. And Rage's opinions on the matter were much more vulgar than them running a cop off the road in a music video. So, you know. but anyways, just a funny little bit there. Unless you got anything for Set It Off still. Nope. Next track, Shadow of the Sun. I think it's slept on a little bit, but it's another fantastic ballad, dude. Up-tempo drums and low kind of plucky full-bodied riff. Cornell does the verses in low, full, sad level, but then raises it up angry on the chorus again. It's really more focused on Chris than it is the rest of the band. The music's a little bit softer. But Morello gets a sick solo in this one, too. And, again, he's playing. He's pulling out the bag of tricks, doing all his shit. It's just a great ballad, man. I haven't missed yet.
Yeah, this is one of my favorites, too. Lyrically, he sings, I can tell you why I'm a shadow on the sun. Kind of talking about a relationship and the sun representing brightness, happiness. And he's kind of thinking, like, all right, no relationships last. He's going through it. And then there's also, he sings, staring at the loss, looking for the cause, and never really sure. You know, just having a relationship end and not really knowing what happened and how to recover from it. But, yeah, great songwriting, great song. This is one of my favorites from the album.
Really cool stuff here. Next one, I Am the Highway. For some reason, I thought to myself, maybe Joey doesn't love this one so much.
No, I like this one.
I really like this one, too. And this is the second true ballad on the album. The last one was kind of a power ballad. This one's a true ballad. Shuffly mid-tempo drums with stormy acoustic and electric guitar. This is like the song at the show where like the lights go down and the lighters go up. Very much like a slower, almost kind of a folky thing. Cornell's really slowed down, really dragging out the lines here. Sticks mostly in the mid-range, but has a few higher notes in the chorus. I like it a lot. I don't love it, but I like it a lot.
Yeah, no, I like it a lot. This is one of the hits in terms of the streams off the album. Yeah, funny on this one, Cornell began playing an acoustic version in the middle of the band's live sets, and like he was surprised at the positive response that it got, which gave him like the courage to go and pursue like more acoustic songs under his own, you know, his solo work and whatnot.
Yeah, anyways, really good stuff here. Different than most of the rest of the album, but a must listen for sure.
Yeah, and people were saying, you know, it's about, like, escaping a one-sided relationship. People were saying it could be about his ex-wife or just him leaving Soundgarden. But either way, really, really cool song.
We bring up Soundgarden there, an interesting kind of thing, too. And this will be important as we get to the end of the episode. Chris left Soundgarden in 2000. It was kind of a wishy-washy answer why he described he left Soundgarden. Basically said, I want to try some other stuff creatively. Like, I don't have anything against the guys. It just wasn't, like, piquing my interest. And, you know, I got to try something else. Chris and Tom, well, both geniuses in their own right, seem like a bit of shit stirrers that would maybe be tough to have an extended run of good times with.
You know what they seem like? James Harden.
Oh, no. It's not Harden and Kyrie, man. Stop it. Don't say that.
They're talented, but they can only do something for a couple years at a time.
More so
Chris than Tom.
But. I mean, I don't know, man, because, like, Tom, you know, he does the Night Watchman, but he's kind of been, like, a fucking freelancer since for a long time, dude.
Yeah, that's true. But, yeah, I mean, Chris, too, like, three bands and a bunch of solo work, too.
A bunch of solo stuff, yeah. Yeah, yeah. They're free souls, man. They're not really going to take anybody's direction. They're going to do whatever they want to do, and that's a bit of a tough thing to do when later on you may not agree on the direction of the band.
Yeah.
Anyways, just a note there. Next track, Exploder. It's very Show Me How to Live, very Coach Ice, same kind of sound. Mid-level from Cornell, kind of tense verse building onto a heavy-as-fuck chorus. Cornell does get to, like, play around here a little bit, like, towards the... It's very classically structured, or I guess typically structured in terms of Audioslave. But at the very end, you hear him doing a little like scat doo-wopping kind of thing, which is like going back to his more old school roots. But adding that into a hard rock track is just a funny thing to do. but it's a cool little note on this one.
Yeah, he's got a verse in here. Third verse. There's a man who had a face that looked a lot like me. I saw him in the mirror and I fought him in the street. Then when he turned away, I shot him in the head. Then I came to realize I'd killed myself. Sounds just like Fight Club. Came out in 1999, I think.
Yeah, right. And a bit of the same thing as Coach Eyes.
A little bit of that, too.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is a cool song. I really like just like the main guitar riff from Tom on this one.
Yeah, really. I mean, he doesn't miss on any of these songs, so totally agreed.
Right. Yeah, and then the next song is Hypnotize, which this is one of the few ones that I didn't end up saving from the album.
Yeah, my final note here was cool stuff, just not as quite as catchy as the others.
And this is very social justice-y. You're super successful, now share the wealth. That's the whole essence of the song. Just not necessarily for me, I guess.
Like I said, Tom gets his kind of tentacles in a little bit on the writing.
Yeah, right.
That's not to say that Chris is some, you know, hard conservative political figure either.
No, I think they're pretty...
They're both pretty left-leaning.
Right.
No judgment, just a statement of fact. But yeah, you get a little bit of that social justice warrior stuff here. It also, like, just musically, I think Hypnotize is a great title for this track, because this track does have a bit of like a slow, melodic, almost like tranquilizing sound to it. Not to say it's not heavy, it is, but like Chris's notes drag out, they're a little bit mumbly. The guitar, like, notes are a little bit more long, not so choppy and like funky. You know, there's some other cool stuff here. A good solo from Morello again, where he's got that laser gun thing going on. Like I said, just not quite as catchy as the rest of the tracks on this album.
Yeah, especially not lyrically. The next track is Bring Him Back Alive, which is a pretty good song. There's a wicked solo at the end of the song.
Another one, man. Like, great deep cut. And I like Chris's work on the chorus, too, here. It's very sing-along, but, like, in almost like a 70s, like, heavy metal kind of way.
Well, dude, the chorus is just him singing, I am a virus, I live in silence, which is super, like, self-loathing and has, like, an eerie kind of vibe to it.
Right. It's really druggy, really fucked up, but, yeah. Like, hits home for those people who like that heavy metal kind of thing. And I think it's just super, like, catchy and not catchy, but, like, sing-alongable, too. This is very much, like, great live work. And for that, I'll say this is another really good deep cut off this album.
No, I'm with you. I like that one, too. I like the next one a lot, too, Light My Way. It says, this was very, like, this Rage. Sounded the most ragey to me out of all the songs on this
note.
Album. Yeah.
Yep. And you get, like, this wow, wow, wow.
Yeah, the wah-wah.
Yeah, you get a lot of the wah-wah on the guitar here, which, again, is very Rage. Like, it almost struck me as, like, maybe this didn't make the unreleased Rage album. Let's rework it and put it here.
I wouldn't blame them if they did it, too.
Yeah. Otherwise, it's very much the same structure as a lot of the previous songs. A little bit simpler musically, but, you know, still a really, really good sound. It feels a little bit like Chris maybe didn't reach up to the very highest of highs on the mic. Still really good, just not like maybe just an off day in the studio.
I really liked the chorus. I thought he did good work on the chorus.
Yeah, I think he's given it his all, and his all is just maybe not 100% that.
Gotcha. Yeah, lyrically, this is a song about a man who hasn't accepted existence of God, and then when he's about to die, he's like, all right, light my way, you know, having the change of faith.
There's also something in here that I don't really know what it is, but there's this weird, it almost sounds keyboardy, a bit like a phone dial, where, like, you hear the button pressing.
Oh, okay.
There's a little lick that's kind of mixed in through the middle of the track that you'll hear a few times, and I didn't know what was going on there. I don't know why they even added it, but just something I saw. I was like, where the fuck is this? Maybe it was Morello doing another thing that I've never seen before, but I would imagine that's somebody in the studio afterwards being like, oh, actually, you know what this needs? Phone dial keyboard. Anyways.
It's got to be on the bottom of the sound effects list.
Yeah, exactly. Next one, Getaway Car. This one sounds a little bit more like the Temple of the Dog stuff that Cornell's done.
Okay.
It's a little bit bluesier and easygoing kind of thing. He's doing a little bit of, like, harmonizing on the mic here, and some of the guys in the back are even helping out a little bit. It's a very cool down rock track with kind of like low, sad notes and easy breezy drums. It's got elements of soul music as well in the vocals. You hear him get a little soulful with it. It's very different from the rest of the album, and so is the next track, but I like this one a lot, too.
Yeah, I like it a lot, too. And Cornell's kind of singing to someone, like, telling them you need to learn to love yourself for who you are. You know, so get yourself a car and drive it all alone. And, yeah, Chris is great on the mic, per usual. The rest of the song is good.
Yeah.
I like this one a lot.
Yeah, it's a good one. 13 deep.
Seriously.
And then this last track was maybe the other one that I didn't love.
Oh, I kind of like this one.
Yeah, I mean, it's appreciable. Just, I don't know, it's a little too out there for me. 5 minutes and some change of Cornell kind of like working all over the range. But then this like very jazzy, but also like jazz rocky lick or riff under it. Gain pedal is like turned on and off as he goes. You'll hear some clean stuff and then some buzzier stuff. Drums are even a little bit jazzy. I don't know. It's just weird.
Yeah, I kind of thought it was a little darker, a little eerie.
It's definitely darker.
Has a lot of tones of religion in here. And yeah, I thought the songwriting was good. I like this one.
Gotcha. Regardless, that's all to say. This album, again, fucking rocks.
Yeah,
it's not a 10 out of 10, very close.
It's a great album.
Great, great album.
Really great debut album, too.
Yeah, you know, they took the meat and potatoes and made it their own a little bit, but didn't really stray too far from the recipe.
No, and it works.
It works fantastically. And I think they hear the feedback of kind of what we're saying, where it's very rage, and they take that into the next album, Out of Exile, and say, okay, that's what we do really well. Let's see if we can twist it even a little bit more to make it a little bit more original, but still, you know, the bones of it are still in these songs.
Right.
And I very much like this album, too. Not to the extent that I like the previous album, but that's not necessarily me knocking them. It's just that they're trying, on a few tracks, they're trying something different. And sometimes it's not the best, but, you know, like, Morello cannot fuck up. So, at the very least, I get that. And if you like some of the different stuff, then cool. You know, it's just not what I look for.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think sometimes it works really well, and sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah.
Overall, I'm with you. I like the first album a lot more.
But I'm glad they tried it. I'm glad they just didn't do, you know, rage reruns. You know? So.
Yeah.
That all being said, you still get some of that on this album. I don't think this first track is necessarily that. The first track here is Your Time Has Come. It's kind of more of like an up-tempo, almost fun song. Like, sometimes to me it sounds like they're just angry all the fucking time. This is kind of a funner track. Cornell's got a little more energy in the verses, a little less in the chorus than usual structure, where it's very low in the verses, very high in the chorus, which is just something a little bit different. You get plain rock drums, a great solo from Morello here with like a jangly kind of funky riff on the verses and the chorus. It's got the ethos kind of the last album, but it's a little bit twisted. It's something different. They're trying it. And I like it as an opener. I just like it as a song standalone.
Yeah, I like the music a lot on this one. The lyrics are whatever. He has a reference to the Vietnam War in here, which is very, you know, ragey social justice, which is fine. It's just, usually it's just not what I'm coming for.
Right, right.
Yeah, and then Chris also said on it, it's a bunch of references to people that I knew that were younger than me who've been dead for years and years.
Right, your time has come.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good open. Next one, Out of Exile. I think I like this one a little bit more than the last one. I'm not in love with it yet, but I like it a little bit more. Again, a little bit of a different sound. You get this echoey tuned up guitar, and then the riff has a very Audio Slave kind of like typical chorus. I fucked up that, but regardless, my point is like it sounds Audio Slave, just I don't know, the guitar is a little bit different, I guess is what I'm getting at here. Although that's not to say it's bad, it's just different. You get a 6-6-6 solo on this song. He's got all the toys out of the chest again. He tries on like 3 or 4 different like tricks on the solo. It's a longer solo too. And there's some great drums in here too. Another one where he switches up the timing, switches up like the sections, just like the cadence he's playing at. Like, it's a really good song, and it's certainly growing on me the more I listen.
Yeah, I like this one a lot. He wrote it for his wife who's pregnant at the time, and some of the lyrics. When I first came to this island that I called by my own name, I was happy in this fortress, and my exile remained. And then he sings about, you know, getting out of that, like, throughout the song. Yeah, I thought this was, like, really great songwriting. I thought it was cool. It's has a little bit more of a positive vibe to it than some of the other stuff.
Yeah.
I like this one a lot.
Yep. Good work here. Next one, probably technically the hit off the album, Be Yourself. Again, this is more straight ballad here, but you still get Morello like finding a way to get the most out of this. Slower, kind of high-tuned, plucky riff, fairly pared-down sound on the verses, with low, slow beat and like vocals, and then you get like these kind of like bittersweet, almost crying lines out in the chorus. The bridge, very much the same thing. I love the way this bridge is set up. Get a little bit of soloing mixed in. Very, very good, almost great ballad.
Yeah, it's funny. The sentiment of the song is just, you know, whoever you are, just be yourself.
It's very simple.
And normally I don't like those types of songs, but Chris is so good on the mic here that I really enjoy this one.
100% agree.
Where it's like, more often than not, if you had someone on the mic singing, like, if, I don't know.
It's a bit cheesy.
If you had, like, Ed Sheeran singing this song, I'd be like, get the fuck out of here. But something about the way Chris does it.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, agreed. What I think is a better track on this album, but what I was mentioning about Word Salad is doesn't remind me. This is a cool one because this is another one where they change it up. They have these like jangly, fun acoustic riff in the verses. You get kind of lackadaisical, like easy, like just fun lyrics in the verse, and then it punches it up again to the very high end of their energy on the chorus. But then hard drops back into the easy breezy stuff as they get off the choruses. It's cool vocal layering too from Chris here. Again, you're getting some more fun instead of that angry loud. Like, it's a good mix in track to have, and I love this song.
I do too, and it's funny too. Like in the verses when he's just singing, like I like hammering nails and speaking in tongues because it doesn't remind me of anything. He's got all these different like one liners almost, but yeah, the sentiment of the song is, you know, just forgetting things from your past and kind of moving on, or you could look at it as just enjoying like the small pleasures in life.
Yeah, it's word salad, but it's intentionally word salad.
Right.
Right. And so I think it's a bit of it's a kind of a lazy take to look at the song and be like, oh, the writing's shit.
Yeah. No, I've been listening to this song. They used to play this all the time on like 89X growing up, local alternative rock radio station.
Yep.
No,
really, really good stuff here. And maybe not like the very top of their plays by streaming, but...
Oh, it's up there.
Is it?
It's top 10.
Oh, I mean, yeah, top 10. I was talking like maybe not top 5, but still really, really, really good track.
Definitely.
All right, next one. Drown Me Slowly. And this is another up-tempo banging rocker. Cornell yelling from start to finish. Some of my favorite work from Tom on the guitar here. I mean, just... all the stuff he can do, every little trick he's got, he's doing on this solo. The riff is super soothing and inviting, where it's like, it's almost just this like quiet, plucky thing as he's going. But you get everything he's got on this solo. And the drums are great here, too. It's a great, another one where they break up the sections by the drums, and all the drum sections hit. Fantastic deep cut.
Yeah, musically pretty good. Not a whole lot lyrically. I don't really have anything to add for this one. But yeah. After that is Heaven's Dead, which is kind of like almost like, I don't know, like a lullaby. It sounds like someone's trying to reach out to someone that's going through a tough time.
Yeah, lyrically it's a little weird.
Yeah.
You know, to me it sounded a bit like, how do I put this? Almost like shit happens, just like, you know, shit has happened, shit will happen, like get along with it. I don't know if that's 100% it, but... it's just a weird thing lyrically. Regardless, you get more of that blues influence here. You hear very southern blues in this song. A lot of stretched out lines, but then also like high range, not so angry. Guitar on this one is a bit more Skinnered than it is Rage, honestly. More of that southern blues kind of sound to it. Different sound. Not my favorite, but, you know, appreciate them for trying something.
Yeah, I think this song and then the next one were both just kind of all right for me.
Okay.
The next one being The Worm, which lyrically is kind of funny. He's like making fun of people who find religion and are like reborn.
Yeah.
Or at least that is, to me, it sounds like he's making fun of them.
Yeah, that's what I got out of this one too.
Yeah.
I do like this one though. I think musically this one's pretty cool. Vocals are loud in your face. Another somewhat bluesy track. Simple blues drums. the solo again here, man. It's just him doing all sorts of shit he can do. But a lot of that whiny kind of like rage, Bulls on Parade solo guitar. Really catchy chorus on this one, I thought, too. I very much enjoyed this one.
Okay, yeah. After that is Man or Animal, which is, I like the sound of it. I think it's a sex song.
Yeah, I can see that. Sorry, I didn't want to interrupt you. You look pensive.
No, I was just reading some of the lyrics I'd written down here, but I don't really have any, I don't have a point to make out of the lyrics.
Would Manimal have worked better?
No, that would have been dumb.
That would have been dumb. Okay. you know, this is another rip-roaring rock track. Churny, kind of tuned-down, wobbly riff, fast, crashy drums, and Chris letting it all hang out on the chorus. I love this high-energy, angry vibe that we're getting on this one. Another great solo, wild, all over the place. I like this as a deep cut.
Yeah, I definitely like the solo on this one.
Yeah, really good stuff. Next one, Yesterday to Tomorrow. Not a huge... I think this is a little bit like... The title for this track strikes me as a bit like overly thought out. I think they thought they were cooking with this title, and it just is like kind of meh.
That's funny. On this track, too, I really wanted like more of an explosion from the band and the chorus.
Yeah, I hear you. It's somewhere between like the hard rock songs and the ballads. It's just right in the middle, like a very solid rock song.
Yeah, and it is a song about being in love. And I'm with you. They should have either went all the way one way or the other.
Yeah, or at least like give us a little bit of both. I don't know. Because you're just kind of stuck in this middle spot where, you know, you got Chris on the mic almost like crooning through the verses. The guitars are simple. The drums are simple. It's missing a high point. And it's not to say it's a horrible sound. It's just not all there.
No, it's a good song, but it could
be better. Fully developed.
Yeah.
Next one, Dandelion. This is a bright, easygoing track here. Full sounding and energetic, not angry, strummy, kind of folky rock riff here with a quieter but interesting. And like, even though it's quieter, still like powerful drumming. I heard Zeppelin a little bit in this track. I don't know what it is. I just heard something there. But more of a classic rock style for sure on this song. Tom's got, you know, he puts his flair on it, but you still hear the classic rock sound. Cornell mostly in the mid to high range. I don't know. It's growing on me, honestly.
I like it. It's another love song. I like it better than the last one.
Yeah.
And again, you know, I think the songwriting's good here too. Like, I just, and maybe it's Chris Cornell's voice, like, makes the sound, sound better than
what
it is.
It could smooth over a lot of,
I don't know. I'm a big fan of it.
Yeah, I like this one too. Another one that struck me as early Zeppelin, Number 10, which again, not a huge fan of the title, but aside the point.
Yeah.
You hear Tom at the very beginning of this song just fucking around with this tubey hollow lick, and then kind of hard switches into this slow chugging thing with tense bluesy like notes, and Cornell really dragging out lines, mid-low energy for the most part, but Chris adding a little bit of zing on like certain lines to add flair, I guess. Certainly not for everybody, but another one's growing on me.
Yeah, this song's about being in love, but not completely trusting someone, so you're going to keep an eye on them, which, I don't know, that almost reminded me of like a little bit of like White Stripes.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
that sounds like something Jack White would sing about.
Yeah, 100%. Oh, man. Then the last track here, The Curse. And this is a very classic rock sound on this one. Good tempo, fun, approachable energy, muzzled, kind of buffy or buzzy riff with plain rock drums, gritty, powerful vocals, but also got a bit of loving as well, which is a weird thing because you get that lovey-dovey sound, but it's not a lovey-dovey song, in my opinion. Mostly in a mid to high range, but it's a sweet track to close the album with.
Yeah, I like it. I don't think it's necessarily lovey-dovey, but he does sing like at the end of the chorus, like, I will be your luck and never be your curse. So I think it's kind of like, I'll be there for you.
There's love elements, but then there's also some like darker shit in this song that I was like, oh, huh.
True. Yeah, he does.
Maybe I'm just not like, I haven't read super deeply into it, but as I was giving it a couple listens, I was like, I don't know what to make of this one.
Well, I think part of it is maybe him, again, more of like the self-loathing, like thinking that he's going to fuck it up, but trying not to.
Yeah, you hear some of that for sure. Anyways, you know, after reviewing all these songs, I feel the same way as I did earlier. This album's very good. Not quite I think the delta between this album and the last album is higher for you than it is for me.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, I really like this album still. Not as much as the last one, but I think it's certainly, like, if the first one's a 9 or 9.5, and this one's probably like an 8 for me, I think it's a sharp drop off to the next album, Revelations.
Yeah, and I think for me it'd be like, if the first album's a 9, this might be like a 7, maybe like a, yeah.
Sure. Regardless, all to say, Revelations, I think, was maybe messy when they were putting this together, just in the sense that, like, this album comes out in 2006. The band breaks up shortly after, and I'll get to the reasons why later on, but it just feels like there was a lot of strife trying to put this album together and get everybody to have a cohesive thought about what should be going on here.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, it's it's funny, like, kind of what you said earlier, where there's just so many, like, big personalities to try and get it to blend together for more than a couple albums is just a tall task.
Yeah, my guess would be that Tom just loves doing Rage, and he wants to keep doing Rage songs, and I think Chris wants to experiment, and I don't know about the other two guys. It's hard to tell, but you get a lot of mixed sounds on this one, and I think it just, like, there's no cohesion to this album. There's no, like, sonic theme that runs throughout. And, you know, maybe if this album came a little bit later in their catalog, like, say they had another couple banger albums, like, maybe you can get away with this. But at this point, really not in love with this album. Not to say it's horrible. I just, there's more tracks that I dislike on this album than any of the previous. So, with that, let's get into it. Opens with the title track, Revelations. You get more of like a modern rock sound here. Almost not new metal, but like kind of 2000s rocky. Buzzy guitars, fast choppy chords, and then these like up-tempo popping drums. Energetic vocals, but tonally, like, it sounds like Chris maybe isn't feeling the best. Like, there's just something a little bit off with his tone on the mic here. It's a little bit muted, but then also, like, the music drowns him out a little bit, too.
Yeah.
Very loud musically. He gets kind of washed over a little bit, you know. Other than that, like, the guitar work, again, Morello can't miss. Great guitar work. Just not as catchy, and there's something missing on the mic here. It's all right.
Yeah, it's, I go back and forth. Like, it's kind of catchy, but it's kind of not. Like,
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, it, you know, depends on the day, I guess, but I wasn't in love with this song.
Yeah, I think overall this track is decent for me. Lyrically about know-it-alls, people that think that they know it all. But, yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of with you. I think there's something missing on this one.
Yeah, and I think it has a lot to do with the vocals, but which is crazy. But anyways, next track, One and the Same. Little bit more funky here, kind of up-tempo, heavy riff. More funk than rock, but you still get very, like, chunky, loud rock sound here, too. Ripping vocals. Something still sounds a little bit off. Like, you can't reach the very highest highs of, like, Show Me How to Live here. And then he does some, like, back and forthing with the band on the lines, too. You know, it's a fun thing, but then I don't really know how much that little, like, old school bit works in a song like this.
Yeah.
You know, not super tricked up here, but fast picking and fun on the guitar. There's some hip-hoppy drums mixed in on the bridge that bring, like, a little funky flair back to it after you get a heavy chorus. I like it. Don't love it.
Yeah, it's all right. Basically saying, no matter who you love, people will hurt you. Just kind of a nihilistic view, but he does have a line in here, but just like blood and rain, love and pain are one and the same, which I like that line a lot. But yeah, it was just all right for me.
Also a trope that's been done a few times.
What? The
love and pain are all the same.
Oh, yeah.
With love comes pain.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, after that is Sound of a Gun, which is another one that I love the guitar on this. This, lyrically, it's heavily inspired by the Iraq War, which I was reading, like, Chris was saying, like, yeah, I didn't want to make this, like, a political band or political album or whatever.
But
But for this song, you know, me and the band decided we were going to do it.
Yeah, I read something, too. They were far from thrilled with the Bush presidency, and this is about the time that the Bush presidency is wrapping up, so kind of makes sense. Musically here, very similar sound to Show Me How to Live on the riff, especially. It's very similar, but overall a bit softer. The verses get a little bit of like light, kind of fun, strummy acoustic, and then you get back to the heavy industrial, like Show Me How to Live sound on the chorus. Again, the vocals just need to reach a little bit higher. It's so close to being great, but it's not. Very good track.
Yeah, it is good despite the lyrical content, but yeah, it's good.
Yeah.
After that is Until We Fall, which is kind of like a sweet love song. It's got sweet singing, sweet melody, cool vocals.
Yeah, you get a cool acoustic ballad here. Full sounding, though. It's not like a beachy song. Loud popping drums, electric guitar takes over for the acoustic on the chorus, giving it kind of a mid-tempo classic rock sound. Mostly lower level conversational vocals with some higher energy lines mixed in. I didn't find it to be a super interesting track, but...
Yeah, again, it's good, but maybe not as good as some of the tracks on the last two albums.
Sure. Next up, Original Fire. It's got some soulful and bluesy elements in this one. It gets with a pounding drum hit, and Cornell just like repeating the same line a few times. It builds up into a fairly simple classic rock-sounding track. Low-tuned buzzy guitars slowly churning out this very generic riff. You know, it feels like they didn't maybe use Tom to his fullest potential here. Vocals are a little bit better on this one. Like, I feel like as the album goes on, somehow he just starts sounding back to normal. But I don't know. It's getting better, but it's not at the very peak yet. Good, not great.
Yeah, you know what's funny is on Tom's solo on this one, he said, "I enjoy this guitar solo the most because it's one of the most annoying I've ever played." He describes it as the laughing monkey solo. Like, you can kind of hear it. After I read this, I kind of went back and listened to it, and I was like, yeah, that is kind of annoying now that I
wonder if that's something he did in the studio where he's just like, what can I do to piss these guys off? And then somehow that worked its way in tracks.
We said the rest of the band hates it.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny.
Oh, that's cool. All right. Next one, Broken City. This is very slowed down, heavy blues. Bass line here, Fox. It's just this muted, bumpy, fun little lick that gets punched up by Morello. Like, the bass gets a solo section, and then as the verse goes on, Morello jumps right on top of it in the same cadence and punches it up. Oh, it's fucking awesome, dude. Simple thumping drums. Vocals really give it great energy here. This is another one where you get a little bit of doo-wopping from Cornell on the mic, too. Morello, great blues solo. Not so much like a rock solo, but, you know, it's still really good. Tension here is great. Energy is great. This is probably my favorite song off the album.
Oh, it's funny. I'm not as big of a fan of this one. It's also interesting. The Broken City is referring to Detroit.
That checks out.
You know, now the sun won't shine on this part of the map anymore. When it's cold outside, I see it hide behind the smokestacks. No thin roses, no gold rush, no miner, no revolution they'd hire. And the shipyard is a graveyard. No one will be trying to find them. And yeah, the band said on this one, you know, Detroit used to be the industrial center of the United States for the longest time, and now it's not. Not in those words.
But. Yeah, I don't have anything funny to add to that, so I'll just move on. Yeah, anyways, cool. Next track, Some Days, starts ripping away from minute one here. Another heavy blues track. Not super heavy, but it's got the low buzzy electric that's thumping along over the bass. Cornell belting out lines. He kind of does the live thing again where he's calling out to the crowd on the bridge, like an oh oh kind of thing, waiting for the response from the crowd. Like, this is very built for live music sound. I like this one.
Yeah, musically it's fine. Lyrically, this one felt to me like this was we'll just throw something at the wall and he just repeats some days just ain't so easy.
Yeah, I think they're a bit more like it's a bit more like plug and play on this song, not so thoughtful or original.
Yeah.
Where they're just trying to get something that like the people could sing. So
fair enough.
Next one, Shape of Things to Come. Low, kind of quiet, plucky mid-tune guitar with up-tempo clicky drums and quiet, low vocals. as they go, you know, it gets a solid rock sound in the chorus. Guitar work is nice. You know, the rest of it's pretty meh. Not really a fan of this one.
Oh, it's funny. We flopped on this one. I like this one a lot, this one and the last one.
Okay.
Yeah, and lyrically, he's reflecting on the past, present, and future. I actually like the songwriting a lot. Yeah, this is one of my favorites off the album.
Alrighty, yeah. Not for me, but cool. Next one, Jewel of the Summertime. Terrible title for a track. Terrible. You know, mid-tempo, low, funky riff here with bellowing vocals. It's almost got a Chili Peppers sound to it on the guitar with that, like, choppy, funky thing. Lyrics are nonsensical, but I like the energy here. And I like the solo you get from Tom on this one, too. Pretty good track.
Yeah, we flopped again. I didn't really care for this one. Singing about innocence lost as a kid. But, yeah, one of the worst song names, too, that we've had.
That's horrible. So dumb. Another one where it's a little bit too thoughtful.
Yeah. For sure.
Yeah. Next one, Wide Awake. Strange kind of mid-energy rock song here. You get this quiet, hollowed-out riff with mumbly vocals that are like get a little bit higher energy as it goes. Then you get some background vocals layering Chris's voice in the chorus. You know, bass. You do get like a lot of bass here. The bass gets the shine for sure, but it's still nothing crazy. It's just kind of somewhat simple bass line. Not a big fan of this song.
No, me neither. This one is about Hurricane Katrina, and it's funny, the band said on this one, Tim, it's about President Bush and what an asshole he is. Which, like, I, you know what, thinking about it, Bush had to deal with 9/11 and Katrina. Like, what a bad beat. And in the well, the war was kind of his fault, but yeah.
All right, rank your top five presidents by disasters they have suffered. Go.
Brother, I am not prepared for this game.
Oh, man. Fuck you for writing a diss track about Detroit and giving New Orleans some shine here and saying fuck Bush for not helping them get their shit together.
Yeah, you can look a hurricane right in the eye, 1,200 people dead or left to die. Follow the leaders, we're in it for an eye for an eye.
Yeah.
I mean, what? Anyways.
Detroit don't want you anyways. Next one. Nothing left to say but goodbye. Slower, kind of plodding, sad rock song. Simple pluck electric over a simple, kind of slowed down rock drum. Vocals are nice here. I think he really, like, does a great job of getting the emotion out over the mic. Bit of a strange and eclectic sound to it. You know, not necessarily the rocker you think of when you think of this band, but I don't mind it. It's neither here nor there for me.
Yeah, so this one, Chris actually did all the music and the lyrics himself.
Oh, that's so sick.
Yeah, this is the only song on the album where it was like 100% him.
That's cool. A little Dave Grohl type deal.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, he said, too, this song is very personal for him about a time in his life when he felt he was out of control mentally, physically, and spiritually.
Gotcha.
I kind of like this one. It is, yeah, it's definitely different. But I kind of like it.
Yeah. Gotcha. Not going to fight. Closer, not good at all. Moth, another bad name for a rock song. That's crazy. It's a weird mix of like softer 2000s rock with an Audioslave chorus built in. Doesn't really showcase Tom on the guitar. Doesn't really do much with the drums. You know, Chris gets some shine here. He gets to kind of solo himself out a little bit, and I think he sounds fine, but I need a lot more from a group of musicians that are this good.
Yeah, lyrically about overcoming addiction, most likely. And it's not bad, but it's just whatever.
Yeah, and you know, there was such a mixed bag going towards the end here. You got to do better than that.
They should have got Rick Rubin back in the studio.
Anyways, I'm not going to comment on that. That's the end of Revelations and all three albums for Audioslave. So, as I had mentioned previously, Rage breaks up because there was creative differences and fighting in the studio. Audioslave breaks up in 2007, shortly after this album comes out, because of creative differences and fighting in the studio. As we mentioned, Tom and Chris are two big personalities that very much I could see as issues over the music, become like stronger and stronger, the little shit starts to like become an issue. It's very much like, you know, when you're married for 25 years and like all of a sudden, you know, the flowers died and it's a big fucking problem. Yeah, I just think they kind of got tired of each other, and Chris was ready. You know, again, they're kind of free spirits. Chris may be ready for something new anyways. So he leaves in 2007 and starts his soloing stuff. Not starts. I think he did some, but gets a lot more back into his solo stuff, which some of that's cool, too. I haven't listened to a ton of it, but certainly slowed down, a little bit more melodic, but cool stuff there, too. Meanwhile, the guys from Rage, I don't know what the drummer and the bassist did. Tom, like we mentioned, he's done a lot of shit. He did a lot more with the Night Watchmen and then has been freelancing on anybody who could ask. So most of that's good work, too. I think Tom Morello is a bit of a godfather to, like, the modern rock era in that sense where, like, anybody who asks for his help, he's more than happy to give them that help.
You know what's? I wonder if he charges for like a guitar solo, like for a feature. You know how like a rapper would charge like 50 grand for a verse or whatever? Like, I wonder if Tom's got like a fee. I would
venture to guess he's got a fairly like fair like royalty thing built into like, yeah, sure, I'll come help you. Just give me like a small percentage of the track and we'll be good to go.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't see him as like a super money grubby kind of guy.
No, I know. I don't either.
Yeah, I don't think that's really what drives him.
Yeah, he's in it for the music.
Yeah, oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah, for sure. 100%. I wish there was more stuff from these guys. We'll never get it, but it is what it is.
Yeah, they played a couple shows.
Yeah,
late 2010s.
They did a show.
Mid-2010s.
Yeah, they did a show, too, in, I think, 2017. In protest of Trump's inauguration.
Yeah, that's what they got back together for. I read that.
Yeah, Rage got together with Public Enemy and Chris Cornell and did like a anti-inaugural ball where they played a bunch of the old tracks and stuff.
And then they moved to Canada.
Oh, man. They even talked. They were like, oh, yeah, maybe Audio Slave will get back together. And then that lasted like 3 months until Chris died. So,
yeah.
You know. Anyways, really good band. Really enjoyed the first two albums a lot. And with that, I think we pretty much covered all of it. So, finishers here. You want to do top 10 songs first?
Sure. Yeah, so I've got Until We Fall, Shape of Things to Come, Be Yourself, Coach Eyes, The Last Remaining Light, Getaway Car, Shadow on the Sun, Doesn't Remind Me, I Am the Highway, and Like a Stone.
All righty. 10-1 for me. I Am the Highway, Shadow of the Sun, The Worm, Drown Me Slowly, What You Are, Coach Eyes, Gasoline, Like a Stone, Doesn't Remind Me, Show Me How to Live. And we had a lot of the same here in the top five, I think, so that makes sense.
Show me how to live. Oh, I don't think I had that one.
No? Show me. Oh, omission on your part.
Yeah, I'll have to go back and listen to that one again.
Great, great song. Albums, I think we're pretty much in agreement. Audio Slave, Out of Exile, Revelations.
Yep.
So then concert set list. I'm going to open the concert with Show Me How to Live. Again, it's got that kind of stuttery, longer open. You can get right into it, gets the people going. I'm going to start the encore with Coach Eyes, then Like a Stone. No, sorry. Drown Me Slowly, then Coach Eyes, then Like a Stone.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. I have opening the concert with Gasoline. Anytime a rock band has a song called Gasoline,
that's
a fairly easy opener.
That was my opener for Seether.
And then for the encore, we'll do Coach Eyes, Doesn't Remind Me, and Like a Stone to close it out.
Yeah, I think that's...
Yeah.
It's strange to have the ballad at the end, but I think it's an awesome closer.
Oh, yeah. And there's... Yeah, especially like... you can draw it out and thanks for coming out, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah. Alrighty, that's all we got for Audio Slave this week. So that next week, we're starting with Papa Roach. Then we'll mix in, like I said, we're going to do George Ezra at some point. We're going to do, I forget the other
Luke
one
Combs.
I said, Luke Combs. And then I'll figure out a third artist. Still thinking about it. So, and then Taylor Swift episode's still coming out, too. We got Lover coming out soon. Check that out if you're interested. That's all we got. So... Follow us on socials, Instagram, YouTube, Twitter, and TikTok at Flip the Record. Like, review, subscribe on Apple and Spotify. Thanks for listening.
Catch you on the next one.